Well, good morning.
It's great to see everyone here this morning as we continue in our sermon series leading up to next week and telling of the what has come to be known as the Christmas story. We talk about the greatest story ever told. One thing that I want to share with you is just kind of an example. As it was handed to me today, I thought, what an example of the story that we share together. And this is just a thank you card. The thank you card from Carol Ann. And it says, many thanks for your expression of sympathy for the Highland Hills family. Thank you so much for all the acts of love shown to us at the time of my mom's death. The cards and the visits and the beautiful poinsettias were very appreciated. Please continue to keep us in your prayers during this time. You're all very important to our family, Howard and Carol Ann. You know, that's an example of just the stories that we share together. The example of just experiencing this life and experiencing all that it has to offer and all that it has to take away. And, to Carol Ann and Howard's not here this morning. He's not feeling well, but they're very much appreciated in this place. And it's because of the experiences that we share together. It's because of the story that we're a part of. You know, it's a story that's always there. This time of year has a specific feel to it, doesn't it? I mean, it's got for us being transplants to this area and being from, you know, spending a great deal of time, you know, more north of here than we are now. But, you know, we're used to a certain type of weather that is really hitting the St. Louis area and the Midwest. And those who have relatives in other places, you know, are hearing about the ice and then the snow, and you see it on television. Well, that's and what they're getting. I mean, it's shutting down parts of the country that are used to getting snow and ice. So it's really bad this year. But and when you're up there, you're thinking, oh my goodness, I hate the snow, and it's all in your car, and you're tracking the house. But now, you know, when we're here and it's 80 degrees last week and we're putting up a Christmas tree and hanging up lights and stuff, and you're thinking, man, it just doesn't feel like Christmas. It just doesn't feel like this time of year. And I know that that's unseasonably warm for even Tennessee, because it's more supposed to be like it is right now. But up until this morning, it really hasn't felt real Christmassy outside because, you know, Hayden's riding his bike to school and wearing shorts and it's just, you know, we got the windows open or the air conditioner on, and it just didn't have that feel. But that doesn't mean that it's not. Just because it doesn't feel like it's Christmas time, let me tell you something. If you don't got your shopping almost done, you better, because it's coming. It's here. Christmas is gonna be here come Tuesday in a week, and it doesn't matter what it feels like, the story is still going on. And this morning, I want us to understand that regardless of how we feel, regardless of whether or not things are going great or things are not so good, or the weather is this way or the weather's that way, or maybe I have this feeling or that feeling, the story is still happening. It's still going on. And the beauty of it is that we are still a part of it. Regardless of how we feel, regardless of the changes or the expectations that we have, we're still part of that story. The fact of the matter is that it is a story. It is the greatest story ever told. And if we ever stop to think about it, isn't that how life comes at us? I mean, life is a story. I mean, it isn't a formula. It isn't an equation. Life is a story that comes at us scene by scene, doesn't it? It comes at us at one experience after another. It's something that we play out, that we experience together one at a time. I mean, life is all about a story. Bring two people together and before long you'll have story time. Whether it's a kid on grandpa's knee, whether it's two guys just out in a boat fishing, or two guys out in a canoe trying not to die, stories just sort of start happening. You just start telling them, you start sharing them. Two strangers stuck in an airport, their flight's canceled, and they're sitting next to each other in those somewhat uncomfortable chairs that are at the airport. What happens after a while? I mean, you start talking, and before long, the stories start coming up, and you start talking about, hey, what's your family like? What are you? And you just start sharing stories. Life is all about stories that we experience. The problem is that we feel like a lot of times we've arrived at our story about 45 minutes late. You ever done that? Ever go to a movie and you get there 20 minutes into it, and you know that character right there must be important, but I'm not really sure why. And this is what just, you know, why did he treat her like that? Why did he say that to that guy? And what's going, you know, and you're just kind of confused the rest of the movie because you got there late. Isn't that how life is? A lot of times we feel like, and even as we read this, we pick up right now at the birth of Christ or the Christmas story, and you wonder, what's the significance of it? Sometimes it feels like we just showed up just a little bit late. There's pieces that are missing. We feel that way because we realize there's a larger story. There's a larger story than what's in front of us. This time of year is a great time to spend in the malls, right? Where's Jim? Big amen from Jim, right? Yeah, spend time in the mall right now. What do you see when you go to the mall or a train station or a big area, you know, a big department store or a big office building? You go and there's this map, and it's got this big arrow that says, you are here. And you are here is important relative to what else is going on around you. You see, you are here only makes sense if you know, A, where here is, and B, what else here is related to. You see, when you go to the mall and you find out, oh, I'm here, okay, well, great. What now? What does that mean for me? Well, it means if I want to get to where I want to go, then I know where I'm beginning, where I'm starting. And I have an idea about where to go from here. But you are here is important because it's relative to what else is happening. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11, the Bible tells us that God has knit eternity into the hearts of every human being. We know beyond a shadow of a doubt that we are part of a bigger story that is happening all around us. We're part of something bigger than ourselves. We're part of this story that begins with Act 1. Act 1 of this story is all about the eternal love. It's all about, as we talked about last week in John 3:16, it's all about the fact that God so loved the world that He gave His only Son, that anyone who believed in Him would not perish but have eternal life. And we talked about that everlasting love. Not just everlasting life, but it's everlasting love. And Act 1 of this story is everlasting eternal love. I remember as a kid spending summers with my pawpaw talking about Southern English. I say pawpaw, everyone in this room knows who I'm talking about. I spent summers in Calhoun County, Alabama with my pawpaw, just having adventure after adventure after adventure. I drove an old Chevy truck when I was 11 years old all through those county roads and crossing four-lane highways, going to the Magic Market to get Moon Pies and RC Colas and Fun Dip and all that stuff. I mean, I'm a 10-year-old kid operating a 3-on-a-tree Chevy truck just like it was no big deal. And I remember just doing all the, just going fishing and hunting and camping out and just working on cars. My pawpaw was a mechanic, and I would crawl up under cars with him, and he would show me all of these things about how transmissions worked and how all this stuff worked together. And I remember all of those things, but I remember one thing in particular. We would visit with all kinds of people. You see, I would run errands with Pawpaw. He'd go pick up parts or go pick up cars or whatever. And along the way, we would just stop and we would just talk to people. And he would share stories with them and jokes and they knew him and he knew them and subsequently they got to know me. And I just remember along the way, no matter what day it was, we would just go along and just talk to people and share stories and just visit and sit and talk, and it was great. And the greatest thing about that is that I realized that those stories and that experience and that adventure, it wasn't dependent on me. It started long before I ever came along, and it happened long before it happened long after I stopped going for such a period of time. See, the fact of Act One and eternal love is that something precedes us. Something grand comes before us. And all of those stories and all of those visits and all of that experience and that adventure, it's built on something that is eternal and everlasting before us. It's not dependent on us. I got to experience that. I got to be a part of it. But my part was just getting to hear it. It wasn't dependent on me. And that's important to us. In John chapter 17, verse 24, Jesus says, "Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory that you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world." The beauty of this thing that we're a part of, this story, is that it's before us. It's bigger than us. It's grander than anything that we can imagine. The story is something that we can count on. And that's important to us. We need to know that love lasts. We need to know that this love story that we're a part of, that we are invited into from before the creation of the world, we need to know that it lasts. You know, we need to know that it's something that we can count on. That this relationship is everlasting. Isn't that why divorce is so devastating? Because the past is lost. Pictures come off the walls. There's names that are never spoken of again. The story's over. You see, my greatest joy in life isn't that I get to experience this adventure. It's that my greatest joy is inviting those in my life to experience it with me, inviting my wife and my children to go along and to be there for the ride, to experience it, because the love story lasts. And the story between us and God, the relationship, we need to know that it lasts. And the first act of the story is God inviting us to be a part of this eternal love. This love that lasts, that's not dependent on us, that was before us and will be after us. And we get to be there to experience it. Which brings us to Act Two of the story. See, Act Two of the story is the entrance of evil. You ever ask yourself, every story that you've ever heard, or every movie you've ever been to, you ever wonder, why does every story have a villain? It means something. There's either a person, a circumstance, a robot, whatever it is. Every story has a villain. And you know why? Because your story has a villain. My story has a villain. The problem is that so oftentimes we don't live like there is. We don't live like there's a villain. The fact of the matter is that there was war in heaven. In Revelation 12 and 7, it says, "And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray, and he was hurled to the earth, and his angels with him." In Daniel 10:4-9, on the 24th day of the first month, I was standing on the bank of the great river Tigris. I looked up, and there before me was a man dressed in linen with a belt of finest gold around his waist. His body was like crystallite, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and his voice like the sound of a multitude. I, Daniel, was the only one who saw the vision. The men with me did not see it, but such terror overwhelmed them that they fled and hid themselves. So I was left alone, gazing at this great vision. I had no strength left. My face turned deathly pale, and I was helpless. You see, the fact of the matter is that we're not alone in this universe. We're not. there are forces and beings at work all around us. You know, when we think about the angels, we think, you know, maybe that's a comforting thought. Maybe it's a comforting thought to think about the angels that are around us that are watching over us. But you know, it's interesting. When you read through the scripture, comfort is not the feeling that most people got when they experienced. When real people experienced real angels, comfort wasn't what they felt. If you look at 2 Chronicles chapter 32 and 21, and the Lord sent an angel who annihilated all the fighting men and the leaders and officers in the camp of the Assyrian king. So he withdrew to his own land in disgrace, and they went into the temple of his God, and some of his sons cut him down with the sword. In 2 Samuel 24, 15 through 16. So the Lord sent a plague on Israel from that morning until the end of the time designated, and the 70,000 of the people from Dan to Beersheba died. When the angel stretched out his hand to destroy Jerusalem, the Lord was grieved because of the calamity and said to the angel who was afflicting the people, "Enough, withdraw your hand." The angel of the Lord was then at the threshing floor of Arnon the Jebusite. And then again in Revelation 9, 14 through 19, and it is said, "And the sixth angel who had a trumpet, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates, and the four angels who had been kept ready for this very hour, this very day, and this month, and this year, were released to kill a third of mankind." You see, the fact of the matter is that there are these beings around us experiencing this same story. And there is a villain who is at war with these very angels and who is at war in this very story with us for the ground that we are standing on, for the ground that is our heart, for the affection that we would give to our God. You ever wonder why the story is started the way that it is? You know, any story, there's foreshadowing. You know, and any, you kind of get the idea of what kind of story it's going to be based on who shows up first. You know, if you start a movie and you have a bunch of soldiers storming a beach, it's going to be a movie about war. If you have, you know, a man and a woman frolicking through a meadow, it's probably going to be, you know, some type of frilly love story. You know, but how the story starts and the characters that show up at the very beginning. And in the very beginning of this story, we see what shows up is this war that's raged in heaven. And this mighty villain that shows up. And you see that perhaps the story isn't as safe as we would like to think. Perhaps the story isn't as safe as we'd like to live so many times, because this story begins with mutiny and betrayal. In Ezekiel 28:12 through 15. You find that on my. "Son of man, take up a lament concerning the king of Tyre and say to him, 'This is what the sovereign Lord says. You were the model of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone adorned you. Ruby, topaz, and emerald. Crystallite, onyx, and jasper. Sapphire, turquoise, and beryl. Your settings, your mountings were made of gold. On the day you were created, they were prepared. You were anointed as a guardian cherub. For as I ordained you, you were on the holy mount of God. You walked through the fiery stones. You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created till wickedness was found in you. Through your widespread trade, you were filled with violence and you sinned. So I drove you in disgrace from the mount of God, and I expelled you, O guardian cherub. From among the fiery stones, your heart became proud on account of your beauty, and you corrupted your wisdom because of your splendor. So I threw you to earth and made a spectacle of you before the kings." You see, the enemy coveted the throne. The enemy of God and the enemy of our souls coveted the glory and the throne. And evil entered the story. The problem is it isn't the cartoon devil in the red pajamas with the pitchfork that so often we want to attribute to the fall of this story. But you see, if you look at verse 17, "Your heart became proud on account of your beauty. So I threw you to earth and made you a spectacle before kings." You see, this this grandest of all angels. And make no mistake, in Scripture, angels are these beautiful, terrible, dreadful, glorious creatures. And one of the strongest ones of all turned on his Maker, turned on the one who he coveted his glory. And now he is enthralled in this battle that's Act 3, the battle for the heart. You see, this is where the attention turns, because we hear about original sin, but we don't really hear too much about original glory. If you look at Psalm 8, 3 through 5, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him? You made him a little lower than the heavenly beings and crowned him with glory and honor." You know, original glory came before anything else, and it's deeper to our nature than I believe sin ever will be. Is the original glory. And the fact of the matter is that in Genesis 3, verses 1 through 6, unable to overthrow the throne of God, unable to overthrow God, the evil one turned his attention to those who bore his image. And here we have the battle for the heart. In Act 3, here is what begins, what will last the rest of all of time. And the greatest battle that will ever be raged, because God says, you know, "I have not yet begun to fight." Unable to overthrow God, the evil one turns to his creation, the ones who bore his image. And that is where the battle rages. And rescuing the heart of man, rescuing what God created, rescuing what he gave us to choose him with, is the greatest mission of all time. God has spent the whole story from the fall in the garden until this moment doing that very thing. He has turned all of his attention to bringing back the creation that he loves and that he endowed us with. The greatest dignity ever given is that he enables us to love. He enables us to choose him back. But you see, the story has a dilemma. The story has a dilemma that we're not really sure if we want to be rescued. We're not really sure if what we truly want is what we really had in the beginning. And so there we have what we'll get into next week. And that is that the fourth act compels us. And he draws us towards that rescue. You see, so many times when we focus on the birth, the life of Christ, it is the culminating battle of this battle for the heart. But really, it's not the place to start, because when you start in Act 4, it confuses what's gone on before. It confuses why we're in the situation, why it's even needed to in the first place. And so I want us to be thinking about this dilemma that we face. These lives that we live, are they lives that we want to be rescued back into a glorious relationship, an intimate relationship, a personal relationship with the Creator who thought of us long before the creation of the world? He enabled us to love Him back, and He gives us this opportunity to be with Him. Is that what we want? Because that will be the dilemma that we face. And next week, as we talk about the baby in the manger, we talk about the life that he lived and the example that we have, we'll talk about the greatest rescue in all time, the culmination of the greatest love story the world has ever known. This morning, we have an opportunity to leave this place a little bit different than we arrived. We have the opportunity to be the kind of people that God has called us to be. And the only way that we can have that is through a personal relationship with him, through a life-changing, life-altering experience. See, no matter where we are in our life, God is always calling us back to experience this life with him. Not to experience this life alone, not to experience this life as we would define it, but to experience this life with him. This morning, you have the opportunity to do that as together we stand and as we sing.